I'd like to introduce Professor Joseph Liebehal, who's at McGill University, and Will Nature Survive Compute? I hope you read the abstract. The title does make complete sense.
Well, this is my first talk at an ASA meeting, and so I kind of scripted it. And I'll probably go off the script every once in a while, but just because I'm a little bit nervous, I've scripted it, and so we'll kind of go that way. So I'm Joseph Liebehal. I teach at McGill University. My research areas are in intelligent machines, but also in the impact of social media, how AI plays into that. But today I would like to introduce a relatively new term that's become very common in computer science, and that is compute. I would like to begin by defining compute and then discussing how compute relates to the impact of nature. I've reduced things that we are going, what things we can do to sort of solve it. I've sort of reduced that part. And I've increased the part on a theological reflection on what directions maybe we should take. So I want to sort of do that. Half the talk is kind of computer science. Half of it is a theological reflection. So to start it off, we need to understand two particular technologies. One is the CPU, which you see over here, and you kind of see how large a CPU is. You kind of see how it's flat. There's lots of things inside the CPU, but really the important thing inside the CPU is a calculator. And you understand what that is, right? Plus, minus, times, divide. If you have a inexpensive device, you'll have one calculator. If you have an expensive device, you'll have maybe four calculators in there, and they can run at the same time computing stuff. This is a GPU. This picture shows how big a GPU is. You know, it's kind of hand size. This is a GPU which I use. It has 1,667 calculators in it. Okay. Notice that there are no fans on the CPU, but there are two fans on the GPU, and there's liquid cooling as well. Another thing to keep in mind is that a CPU runs at about 95 watts. CPU, 95, one light bulb. And if you're not using your computer, but your computer is on, it runs about half of that, so 47 watts. This guy runs at 300 watts. Okay, so quite a lot more energy there. In the 2000s, many businesses and universities reduced their in-house computers to leverage the cost savings and the access to skilled workers by moving their computer infrastructure to shared computer infrastructures. And we have two kinds. And we call it the cloud, right? So this idea of moving technology into these common places is called the cloud. We have two kinds. We have this kind where we call a data warehouse. So you can think of that as the internet and social media. You can kind of think of it like that. University infrastructure, you can think of that. When you think of AI, you think of a GPU farm, large, highly integrated parallel GPUs, which compute constantly, 24/7, 365 days in the year. And it's important for these industries to have their resources running at full power, because if it's not running at full power, then they're not making money. And so these things are running at 300 watts or 95 watts. They're not running at the half watts, because if they're doing that, they're losing money. So they're running as best as possible, as quickly as possible. Now, ChatGPT uses a GPU farm, and all of their cousins use GPU farms at the 300 watts, right? And what's interesting is that maybe it's the next slide. I'll say it here. So what's interesting here is that I think I lost my train of thought. I'll just go with my script. I had a good idea, but so Amazon defines compute this way, which I actually like this definition, because it encompasses the whole idea. So it's not only about the processing power, it's also about memory, networking, storage, and other resources required to do the computation. And so in AI, when you do one query or you generate your picture, you're using not one GPU, right? The one GPU that I showed you. You're using a room full of GPUs, right? Larger than this room. And these GPUs not only use 300 watts, but you saw they have two fans, liquid cooling. There's a lot of air conditioning that goes into keeping so many machines running. So there's a lot of energy that goes into this. Now, Sasha at Hugging Face, she's a really great AI person who studies this. And so she has this formula, it's a common formula, over here. So I translated it into English. And the CO2 emissions is equal to the amount of power that you need, multiplied by how long you need that power, multiplied by what you're plugging into, right? How they generate the power. And so if you think of an AI model being created on a single GPU, that's completely fictitious, because it's not generated on a single GPU. But assuming a single GPU, which consumes 300 watts, so just a standard GPU, and if you assume that the grid emits 500 grams of CO2 every kilowatt hour, then you can compute this, and you get 15,000 grams, so 15 kilograms of CO2. Okay. If we do exactly the same calculation, but we change the place where we're plugging our stuff in, so instead of, 500, we use 100 grams of CO2, then we're at 3 kilograms. So where you plug in is kind of useful to know. This is another interesting graph by Sasha. So you don't really have to know anything about this graph. I just want to point two things out. These are things that AI does. We're going to look at this one and the last one. And this is how much CO2 it generates. So if you're doing text classification, then you're kind of like at 0.5 grams, worst, well, 0.3 grams, worst case, maybe 0.6. If you're generating an image for your PowerPoint presentation, then you're at 500 grams, or that dot up there is above a kilogram. So you're doing like, I want to do a picture, I don't like it, I want to do a second picture. All right, so you've done 2 kilograms. you've done two kilograms there. So, and all the other kinds of things you can do. So this is also interesting quote. This is from Loic, Cambridge University. He's a computational biologist. I work with a lot of computational biologists at McGill. We have a big community in our department. So this is a quote chopped up by me, but in genome-wide association studies, anytime you come across an article saying, we found the gene for X, that's usually what's done. The ML model can use as much as 17 tons of CO2. For reference, you can fly to France every morning for breakfast for 6 months. Right, that's... So I would like to go to France for 6 months. It's hard to find these numbers, but I did find it for ChatGPT-3. ChatGPT-4 is hard, and now there's O, and there's all these other guys. So in ChatGPT-3, it took 34 days of compute, right? Not 100 hours of compute, right? 34 days of compute to create that model. So that's, 500 tons of CO2. Which is 29 times more than that flying to Paris thing that we just talked about. But the good news is that you don't create a model every weekend, right? ChatGPT came out 3, and then later on 4 came out, so you don't do that all the time. What you do all the time is query it. And so this is text querying, this is not graphics querying, okay? So this is text querying. And so it's pretty cheap. 2.5 grams is kind of like a Google search. Okay, but we do 10 million of them per day. So that's 25 tons, roughly. So this is another quote. Anthropologist Stephen Gonzalez Montserrat. So the cloud now has a greater carbon footprint than the airplane industry. A single data center can consume the equivalent electricity of 50,000 homes, 200 terawatt hours annually. Data centers collectively devour more energy than some small nation states. So is there anything that we can do? Right, so I'm basically just gonna talk about number 3 and number 5. Mostly number 5. I've done this talk before, and I did all 5 of them, but we don't have time. So better algorithms and pipelines, this is good. We've done experiments in my own lab, 10-15% improvements, that's okay. Data centers in colder climates. So for some reason, the deep south of the United States is a really great place to put these data centers, where it's like, not cold. I'll talk a little bit about optimizing and targets. Greener energy sources, of course, but only hydro really so far, and batteries. So there's kind of issues about their technology. And I want to do a theological reflection. Not that I'm a theologian. So really in this particular slide, I really only want to focus on this because this sort of came out in 2023, and then this news in 2024. So Microsoft had this great plan that between 2020 and 2030 it would go to zero. Right? And in their 2023 environment studies, which you can download, I had to download it and graph it myself. And so this is it. So this is where AI exploded. And they were like, we are behind. We cannot be behind. And so they said, forget about this, right? And they worked really hard. And then they started like realizing, right? And then in 2024, they announced that they want to open up Three Mile Island again, because that would be the green way of getting power. So this is maybe the kind of things that we're thinking about, or they are thinking about. I want to move into theological reflection about this, and I want to talk about Sabbath. So I would now like to move to the discussion towards a theological reflection, comparing the ways we treat the world with the ideas of Sabbath rest. I would then like to compare that to economics using a thought experiment tool called game theory. Then I would like to make some observations on that. So I kind of want to go into this kind of direction. First, I'd like to say that I would like to describe Sabbath in kind of four different movements. Okay, so its introduction, Moses converting it into an ethic. So, and then there's a series of critiques, and I value critiques. So whatever things you critique me about, like, I value that a lot. And so the prophets critiqued, and basically the way things were practiced, which led to the exile. And then Jesus himself critiqued the way it was also practiced. So I think those are good critiques to kind of help us see, you know, what Sabbath means. So first, we see the foundational pattern established by God. God rested, implying that there must be a reason for resting. However, resting does not necessarily mean to simply go to sleep or go on vacation. A king rests by sitting on a throne and observing and ruling over their creation. But the seventh day was made holy, so nothing else would start on that day. I don't know. To move really fast. Okay, so moving really fast. Can I take advantage of the fact that I'm the last speaker? So here, movement number two shows that what Moses does is he goes into the Ten Commandments, and then he expands it into the sabbatical year, which not only says that I rest every seventh day, is that the land rests every 7 years. And every 49 years, there's an economic forgiveness and a reshuffling of stuff every 50th year or whatever it was. The question is, why did it need to become an ethic? Why wasn't it okay to just say what God said in Genesis, right? Why did it need to become an ethic? And so what we can see is a lot of issues. So in Exodus 16, okay, I'm going to just rely that you guys know all the Bible, okay? I'm just going to just say stuff, okay? So they were wandering in the desert. Don't store manna, and they store manna. Don't pick up manna on the seventh day. They pick up manna on the seventh day. Moses introduces the Shemitah, and they're like, what's going to happen about food on the seventh year, right? There's this food security issues, a lot of security issues, and there seemed to be that people didn't understand the nuances behind the Sabbath. So here I kind of say, if you're stopping to work after seven days, it means that you're not using the land, you're not using animals, you're not using tools, your servants aren't working, your hard labor isn't working, nobody's working, right? And but Moses expands this into the idea of forgiveness and economic rest includes these other things. And so there's this mental health issue. How can you rest if you're stressed? That's a 1 minute? 1 minute? Oh my goodness. So, talk about stress. So, okay, so I'll connect a couple. So I have to not do something. So I'll point out something. In ancient times, people and animals resting kind of makes sense. Land resting, this is like an automatic process. I mean, after you plant, You don't do anything, right? And so what does that mean for our modern times? What's an automatic process, right? This is generating wealth, and it needs to rest. There needs to be a seventh year where there's no planting, you know? And so what does that mean in our modern context? So I am going to just skip over this recurring theme of lack of faith. So it's a hard ask. It's a hard ask to tell us to not think about food security. It's a hard ask to follow all of the Shemitah, right? This ethic of rest. It's hard to follow that. And it was never even fully practiced by the Jews, some say, right? And we can even go this on a tangent where the Jewish people didn't even want to keep God as their king. They wanted a human king, right? So it's a hard ask, this thing, right? If you talk to Moses, have faith. But apparently not. What can I say now? How can I move on? So I did want to mention stress points. What are our stress points? So I think of mental health issues for the youth. Since I work in social media, there's a corollary that doesn't always mean cause, but there's a corollary. There's the idea of maximum resource extraction and the rapid development of AI, which I wanted to explore through the game theory idea. So. Just to quickly go there, give me 1 minute more, please. So So there's a bunch of verses here about the prophets criticizing stuff. Amos is really great for saying something like people wanted the Sabbath to end so that they could go back to work. And Jesus is a great example because he worked on the Sabbath. Now the idea here, not here. So Sabbath speaks about our motivations of people and how they should make decisions. The economic principles as summarized by this guy's book is, number one, how people make decisions. Number two, how people interact. And number three, how the economy of the world works, which just means the greater people-to-people interaction. So Sabbath directly has the same definition as economics. Okay. So game theory is a really great tool as a thought experiment because you turn things into a game. You take a real life situation into a turn-based game. I take a turn, you take a turn. So you can do that with humans, non-humans, nature. And the idea is that you start the game at some point. Everybody has rules and motivations for how they take turns. And you just see how the game plays. And players can be greedy or players can be altruistic. So there's a really great game in economic theory called The Tragedy of the Commons, where we assume that we have a bunch of greedy players, a limited resource, and we want to find a path that ends to something good. Does it end to something good? So last thing I'm gonna say is there's the herder's game. So let me describe the herder's game to you. So there's a bunch of herders that are taking care of a herd of animals. They make money by having more animals. So the more animals you have, the more wealth you have. However, there's a limited resource. They're on a continent. Right, the continent is a limited resource and the animals will degrade the land. So not like zero, but it'll degrade a certain percentage. Greedy thinking would be the following. More animals means more security for me. More people becoming herders means more prosperity for all. Right, clearly this, you can see where this is going, right? This is a problem. But this is the greedy way of thinking, and this is a common way of thinking. I hear this kind of thinking all the time. So the observations are, and I'll kind of end here. Okay. More people becoming herders is true if we have a moderate number of animals, if we're not maximizing the animals, then more of us, not all of us, but more of us could be herders if we're kind of being moderate. If the land can restore itself, then we need a mechanism for that. So let's say, for example, I have 2 units of land. I have my animals on the 1 unit land for this year, and next year I put my animals on the 2nd unit of land and let that unit of land rest. Then I can kind of go back and forth. Of course, that's half the unit of lands for everybody to have and whatever, but that would be a way of restoring. Now, the problem here is if one of these people, if everybody is altruistic except one person, right, then they become rich. And at the end, the whole continent gets filled and the land gets degraded and there's hardship for all. But what's great about the rich person is that they have the money to go to another continent. Right, and the rest of us stay on that continent. Now, of course, this can be solved by racing, which is what we see with AI, right? We race, and then at least some of us can escape to the other continent. This is what the game theory kind of shows us. And so I don't have time to talk about it. But it does talk about scope questions. Can I do that? So we kind of make a formula for stuff. So greedy people think about money, security, and family. So family was raised in the last talk. The far horizon question is what Sabbath talks about, I think, is how long will things last? What's the impact on others, right? The loving others, you know. These are higher order questions that greedy doesn't think of. That's it.
Yeah, I have a question. Before I was coming out to the conference, I had to turn off my computer. I have a Windows 11 laptop, a desktop computer. And so I went down to shut it off, and I noticed that on the power that it's running about 120 watts of power. And what's it doing? And so I looked at the task manager, and it's doing all that. I had no programs running, but it was doing all kinds of Microsoft maintenance tasks, running the internet lights. And I'm thinking, that's been going all night, using my power in my house, 120 watts. Multiply that by the number of desktops. Microsoft is getting an awful lot of cloud services going on my dime. Is that really true? What's going on there?
Yeah, that's really true. It's really true. If you are really worried about it, you should shut down the computer and not put it to sleep or stuff like that. Like, it should be shut off. But that's happening. If you have Wi-Fi, then it's constantly checking for updates. It's constantly, if you allow feedback back to Microsoft to make their software better, then that's happening in the background. Yeah.
Mining. What is the power used for crypto miners?
I don't do crypto, so I'm not exactly sure, but I would assume it's just the same, because it's running on the same machinery. So it's the machinery that's important. Yeah.
All right. Thanks again.
Sure.